Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. My name is Terry Fletcher, and we are off and running to another Tuesday. It's October 1st, and I'm very excited to be here. I love October. Cooler weather, Halloween is right around the corner, and it also happens to be my birthday month, so I like it, October. It's pretty cool. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, I want to get into the topic and revisit the prescription drug management option on the table of risk for medical decision-making of an E&M. I know I've touched on medical decision-making before, but in the last month or so, I've had more questions and quite honestly, more headaches with this one issue than anything else I'm training or teaching or auditing on. And it's a headache for a lot of auditors and also probably for the coders, where the physicians basically just say, I gave a prescription, so this is automatically a level 4. So another clarification needs to be discussed, and I think immediately, because we have some issues right now with Medicare looking at auditing a lot of practices before the new rules take effect 2021 for E&M. So, and I also wanted to touch briefly on a topic of professional goals and personal goals you may have set for yourself this year. We're entering the fourth quarter of 2019, and we need to take our temperatures and see where we're at. But first, the CodeCast Podcast is also brought to you by Stratus Building Solutions, the leading green janitorial service provider, environmentally responsible, certified cleaning experts, superior reputation, stratusbuildingsolutions.com. I actually own a few of the franchises myself. Great company for medical office cleaning, and so check them out as well. And Stranger Things, a Netflix original series, netflix.com/Stranger Things. Okay, so what I want to talk about. So when can a prescription drug management service be credited in the medical decision-making or the risk of complications chart in medical decision-making? So credits given for prescription drug management when documentation indicates medical management of the prescription drug by the physician who's rendering the service. And I'm going to talk to you about what that includes in just a second. So a question had come into me actually recently where the office I was dealing with, they actually handed out free samples of prescription cream for skin conditions on some patients. And usually the instructions will say use until gone. But one of my colleagues and I, and actually one of the physicians, was under the impression that they could bill a level 4 E&M service just because they handed out these prescriptions. And there were no other elements of the medical decision-making performed. And so did this qualify as a level 4 service for prescription drug management? Well, the thing that you have to be careful of, especially when it comes to samples, is that it's not actually prescribed. Management implies that the interaction with the patient and the prescribed drug is an ongoing process of evaluating the patient's reception to the drug, looking out for toxicity, interactions or side effects. Okay, so in terms of the E&M guidelines, prescription drug management can be writing a new prescription, reviewing or changing prescribed medications or dosages, discontinuing an existing prescription and why, or a decision not to add a new medication to the current drug regimen due to potential harmful side effects or interactions. But in this case, since the prescription skin cream is not actually prescribed to the patient and there were no instructions specific to that patient's use documented or any mention of follow-up to check on the status of usage, the encounter, in my opinion, wouldn't qualify as that portion of that level 4 visit that the physician wants to get. But we need to revisit once again the three key components of medical decision making in an E&M service. And this is really important because when we get into the new guidelines in 2021, it's going to be the history and exam left up to the physician on what they feel that is important elements, but the medical decision making is going to be really scrutinized on what you can do. So number of diagnoses or treatment options, that's number one component. Number two is amount and or complexity of data reviewed. Sometimes you don't have any data reviewed. You're not ordering any tests. You're not doing anything in that element or that component of medical decision making. And so you get no credit for it. Remember, auditing is a score sheet. And then the last part is the risk of complication and or morbidity or mortality. So there has to be, for a 99214, there has to be a 2 out of 3 of those sections met before an established medical decision can be determined, and then 3 out of 3 if it's a new patient. So, for example, prescription drug management is only one level or risk and or complication on the table of risk. You still have to meet the number of diagnoses or treatment options and amount and or complexity of data review to score the moderate or high level of medical decision making. So the thing that you really have to keep in mind, because this is such a controversy, and I can't tell you how many times I have heated discussions with physicians. I would say 90% of the time they see it my way, and the other 10% of the time, I don't think we can be friends anymore. And then they come back to me and say, okay, I want to do it right, because again, I'm trying to keep them audit proof. But here is what you want to look at in general for prescription drug management. So when writing a new prescription, you need to also correlate that to the diagnoses options and the encounter for the patient. Reviewing but not changing current prescribed medications and dosages and updates on those dosages and noted in why. If you discontinue an existing prescription, again, resolved, not effective, it didn't work for the patient. Again, why? You need to put that information in. That's part of the management. And if you have a decision to not add new medications to the current drug regimen due to potential harmful side effects or interactions, those things need to be documented. Now, the duration of the prescription drug regimen is not taken into account when applying these factors to the table of risk. The problem with jumping forward with moderate complexity just because you have a prescription drug management or prescription drug, I should say a script, becomes a question of acuity. So the table of risk, again, is one of three factors that determines the overall medical decision. And sometimes this category can be a problem because necessitating the visit will be the determining factor for the medical decision. And as an auditor, it comes down to a decision regarding whether the presenting problem is self-limiting or minor, or a new problem to the examining physician, and is there workup or anything extra involved in moving that patient forward with their plan of care. A patient can present with two minor problems, and the medical decision still falls under low complexity, and it is a judgment call that Medicare and CMS allows us to have, and also some payers. So the auditor must walk a fine line, that would be me, between making a sound auditing determination and then leaving it up to the physician, I should say, or leaving it up to the physician to paint a clearer picture of the acuity of the patient. And there's going to be times where the presenting problem reaches the acuity of a level 4 or 5, but the documentation doesn't support it. And conversely, there'll be other times when the presenting problem appears to be minor, but the physician's documentation points to a more complicated condition. And I try to point that out when I see it. I don't always see it because, again, lack of intent or acuity within the record. But my job as a consultant and an auditor and somebody who's trying to give you the best advice and hopefully keep you in the best practices realm and keep you audit proof is to target, make sure that you're not targeted due to previous audit activity from CMS or you know what's coming. So here's my recommendation moving forward. If you are, let's just pretend you are a dermatology physician. If a prescription for topical medication ointments are given to a patient, fully explain why and if you are concerned with any interactions based on the patient's clinical profile. If they're diabetic or if they're on skin-sensitive medications that may interact with your prescription. If you give the patient samples, that is not considered a prescription by any auditor's definition, that's not just mine. A sample means try this and see if it works. There are no properties of managing the patient on the medication. It's just like an over-the-counter medication. You're going to be at straightforward medical decision-making, possibly low if it's more than one, but you're giving it to them. There's not a controlled prescription. This it may be subjective, but you'll continue to be audit-proof with this conservative approach. And I can support a level 2 or 3 with this policy. If the samples are to start the patient off on a prescription and that they need to refill it because they weren't able to get to the pharmacy or whatever at that point, now you have an argument possibly for prescription drug management. Other drugs or prescribed medications that are clearly needing to be managed and well documented, along with other elements of medical decision making, can be counted toward moderate or possibly even high level medical decision making, as long as the presenting problems are consistent with the plan of care. This would be like a patient coming in and they're complaining of, I just had one recently. They're complaining of vaginal itching, red eyes, and pain in their wrist. And at the very end of the plan of care, the patient had an order for physical therapy for their back injury. I'm like, what the heck are you, what the heck are you doing here? I'm not seeing. And I went back and I'm saying, where is the back injury? And I didn't see it. So it has to be consistent and be as accurate and detailed as possible on the acuity of the patient and your role in managing not only the medications, but the detriment to the patient if they do not take the medication as prescribed. That is also part of management if you're concerned that the patient may not take as directed. Now you have potential for a non-compliant patient, which opens up other risk factor concerns. Okay, so just keep those things in mind, and hopefully that gives you a better understanding of the role that prescription drug management plays in medical decision making. So my coding question today is actually a management question. I actually had to get approval from my sponsors to make sure they were okay with this. This is something I actually had to get from my Stratus Building Solutions people, the answer, because I thought this was an interesting question. So it says, what is the best way to get waiting room furniture clean without spreading germs around? I know we have a custodial staff, but once a day at night doesn't seem like enough to stem the germ flow. As a front desk staff, I watch people cough and sneeze into their hands all day, and then they touch furniture, magazines, and things that other people now sit down and touch, and some are elderly patients who are compromised in their immune system. So with me and my colleagues responsible for tidying up the magazines, they were touching those. What can we do? Okay, so this is what I was told, and again, by a green solution company. You've probably heard about the kitchen sponge being the dirtiest thing in the house, and so it makes sense to wonder whether the tools that are supposed to be for cleaning can actually make things even worse in a physician's office. Some cleaning methods can actually spread bacteria around, including a regular rag and bucket. If you or a team member are just wetting the rag in the same bucket that you've been using to wipe down the whole waiting room and you aren't washing it out with hot soapy water, then you're just putting the germs from one chair to the other and magazine to the other. If you or a team member relies on a cloth to clean furniture, try the 8-fold system. Before you start cleaning, fold a square rag twice and then use a different unused section or square for every surface. That way you can clean simple surfaces without drastically changing your cleaning tools or methods or spreading germs from surface to surface until your at nighttime janitorial staff comes in. So anyway, I don't know if you thought that was helpful, but I thought that was a funny question that I got. I'm like, sure, why don't I try to attempt to answer that, since I do have a couple of franchises in the cleaning field for medical. Okay, so today's coding question was brought to you by SiriusXM Radio, Doctor Radio, Channel 110. Check it out live and on demand. Download the SiriusXM app today. You may hear me on Interventional Cardiology Show, Orthopedic Surgery Show, and now the General Surgery Hour. So check them out. Okay, so now I want to get into part two, and just a few minutes I wanted to spend. I had some interesting feedback on my bonus episode that was a little bit of mixed reviews on, you know, just talking to you about basically as a coder and a biller, how you are sometimes going to be policed or monitored from your administrating staff, from possibly a consultant coming in like myself, but it really only kind of makes you better. And hopefully everybody got the positive out of that because it was funny some of the responses I got. And I do appreciate everybody's input, regardless if I like it or don't like it or whatever, but I thought it was just interesting on some of the feedback I did get with that. But I wanted to talk to you about your personal and professional goals. If you haven't made the progress you expected to, do not stress. Just recalibrate your objectives or develop a new plan for reaching those goals as we move forward into the last half of the year. Now, one thing I did want to bring to people's attention, because as I'm doing this personal business coaching, I've noticed that I've also had a little bit of challenges myself, just with some people that want to immediately go from working maybe 5 months to 2 years in the field to entrepreneur. And I'm going to slow you down just a little bit, because professional advancement is a personal responsibility that, yes, benefits you, whether it be with an employer or whether it be on your own. But you have to put in the work first. So different companies, I know a lot of you belong to AAPC or AHIMA, possibly MGMA, but everybody belongs to some kind of association. There's also the NSCHBC out there, which is for healthcare business consultants. There is PMI. There's all kinds of different associations and what you're comfortable with as far as what you can belong to. But you need to supply and do the work. You ask any person who has achieved success how they did it, and each will tell you their journey required dedication and commitment and really focus. And one of the things, especially in your code of ethics for any of the associations you belong to, they really believe in those elements, measuring commitment relative to external things, to complete tasks at work, commitment to others. But it's also important, you need to commit to yourself, specifically your own professional growth. And in this area, it's okay to be selfish. Professional growth is one area where you get to be entirely selfish without any guilt. So a professional medical coder, a professional biller, or an auditor, you need to feel guilt-free about getting your first credential or your next credential, expanding your knowledge in areas where you are weak or curious. Take a few minutes each week to study medical policies that are relevant to you or maybe you want to get into. You also need to work on your writing skills and delivering your first presentation at your local chapter, one of the ABCs of getting into being a consultant. And these are all the things that can help you be successful in the healthcare business field as a professional. And, you know, commit to do these things selfishly, especially if you want to get out on your own. But a word of caution, success takes time. In today's culture, the focus is on immediate results, but unfortunately, gaining experience and expertise, there are processes that require time and continual learning. And be a perpetual student. We all are, and we all will always be students, no matter how long we do something. I've been in the field over 30 years, but there's always something new to learn because things change. And change creates both burden and opportunity. So as a healthcare professional, change is a burden because we must learn the new material and quickly develop mastery to implement the new guidance and sometimes train others. The upcoming E&M changes, for example, that's going to take some learning, not just to implement into your practice. But think about my position. I've got to figure out now how to go back and audit. And as also a Medicare auditor, Medicare is saying, okay, yeah, we're trying to figure that out too. And so position yourself to take advantage of to demonstrate your professional expertise in some of the new things that are coming out. I talked earlier about ICD-10, I think in the last episode, that is transitioning to ICD-11 in 2022. So you just keep climbing in your professional development. Like compliance, it's a process, not a result. While it's easy to reflect on past achievements, professional advancement requires us to keep reaching for the next rung on our professional development ladder. Even if you aren't sure where the ladder goes, keep climbing. The skills you thought you'd never need may someday become important and necessary to you. I'm always looking for a people person, somebody who's approachable, who is able to connect with people. I like somebody who has a good sense of humor, to be able not to take things so seriously, but also know when to be professional, when you need to be. So there's a time for everything, and first focus on being that leader, pushing yourself to be putting in the work and just keep climbing. And then eventually you will get onto that next rung. But I just wanted to just kind of put that a little bit into perspective because of some of the things and some of the feedback that I've received. And working on my own podcast that's coming up for the Business Collective. I know I keep promising you those episodes, and we are getting them together, and you will be happy when you get them. But it's a process, and it's a learning process, and things are changing. So always trying to update that to make sure that you have the best quality information. So I wanted to get back to my shout outs this week. And there are a couple of loyal listeners on the CodeCast that I'm just so proud of. And I really wanted to give them their own personal shout out for what they've achieved this year. And they did it with that hard work and perseverance that I spoke of. Danielle Norton, and now she's a CPC and now a CCC. Danielle passed her certified cardiology coder credential exam. Great job, Danielle. That is such a hard one. I know, I helped write it all those years ago. And Tony Elholmes. Tony is a loyal listener and also a business coaching client. And I'm just in awe of this woman. This healthcare professional has 2 kids under 3. She still found time to attain multiple coding certification. She did it the right way by saving enough money in her last position in the last 10 years in her career to now go out on her own as a consultant. And she is now part of Alpha Coding Experts, which is her company, alphacodingexperts.com. She's an educator. She even does some legal expert coding for companies. and just check out her website. She's awesome. She's also going to be starting her own podcast in early 2020. And I just love everything that she's done. And she's just such a positive influence out there. So I'm excited for her. And I wanted to say hi to Jeanette, Laura, and Janet. Great feedback this week, loyal listeners, and also my new Facebook followers, Laura, Jay, Jan, Bianca, Sydney, Cindy, Nancy, and Lovina. Thank everybody for really just reaching out and connecting and liking things that I post and all of that. So I really appreciate the positive feedback I get. Now, my personal tidbit this week, you know I'm going with football. I promise I won't do it every week, but oh my gosh, if you're enjoying the podcast formats, don't forget to listen to me and download Steel City Underground. I have a weekly segment called WTF, What the Football, and I record every week. And it's not just Steelers. It's all things we shake our heads or eye roll about in the NFL, like Thursday night's game last week with the Eagles in Green Bay. If you're on the one-yard line in the red zone and you're down by seven, Aaron Rodgers, and Green Bay has, they say arguably one of the better quarterbacks in the league, why are you passing four plays in a row? I mean, run the darn ball. See there? I didn't even use a curse word. I wanted to, but I did not. But hey, my team is 0-3 going into Monday Night Football. We've won 16 straight on Monday night. We're playing the Bengals, Cincinnati, a division opponent. So I'm hopeful. Pray for me. I hope I get a win, and I'll be in a really good mood next week if we are. So those are my thoughts today on this Terry Tuesday. That's it for me. Make it a great day, a great week, and thank you for listening to the CodeCast podcast.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer Dasassin Music.